The sky is falling. I know it's kind of a downer of a note to start out a sermon series on change. But sometimes it takes a little urgency to invoke the kind of change that we want or need. And that's what I want to talk about this morning. Some of you might remember the equation for change that I showed you before. Urgency times vision plus first steps must be greater than resistance if we are to expect change. And this sermon this morning is about the you, or urgency, about how motivating urgency can be and also how surprisingly sometimes unifying urgency can be. I want to begin by considering another urgent cry, much like the one that I brought up from Chicken Little. But this one comes from author James Martin, who recently published a New York Times bestseller called The Meaning of the 21st Century. And he writes, "At the start of the 21st century, humankind finds itself on a non-sustainable course. A course that, unless changed, will lead to catastrophes of awesome consequences. This could be humanity's last century, or it could be the century in which civilization set sail to a far more spectacular future. Decisions that will lead to one of those wildly different conclusions have to be made soon, and they depend upon our being able to understand our options, to think logically about our future, and collectively take rational action." He continues, "We live on a small, beautiful planet traveling at breakneck speed into an age of extremes. Extremes in wealth and poverty, extremes in technology, extremes in population and consumption, forces of globalization. If we are to survive, we have to learn how to manage these challenges. During the lifetime of today's teenagers, fresh water will run out in many parts of the world, making food production difficult or impossible. Many fish species will be too depleted to replenish themselves. Global warming will bring hurricanes far more severe than Katrina, and will cause natural climate control mechanisms to fail. The immense tensions brought about such situations will occur in a time of economic and political extremism, religious belligerence, suicidal terrorism, and this will coincide with unimaginable weapons of destruction becoming much less expensive and much more widely available." Or if you don't want to listen to James Martin, this short synopsis from anthropologist E.O. Wilson might do very well. He says, "The real problem humanity faces today is that we have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology." The sky is falling. I did some research this week and discovered that the sky is falling as a theme has never been used before for a church canvas kickoff celebration. So I'm sure that Bruce Romeld and Courtney Irwin, our canvas co-chairs, probably did everyone a very big favor when they voted against my suggestion. For the record, the theme, "The sky is falling," is not big with bar mitzvahs either, or weddings, or housewarmings, or store openings. I mean, why talk about your problems when you can just party? That's a question that was probably asked by the Romans in 400 AD, and maybe by the Mayans in around 800 or 900 AD, and perhaps by the Egyptians, or the Khmer Rouge, or a host of other civilizations that spiraled into oblivion despite all the forewarning of factors that they had about their eventual demise. 2 years ago, a book came out called The Watchman's Rattle. In it, author Rebecca Costa shared a cautionary tale about those Romans and about those Mayans and other civilizations that collapsed. And her research focused on how each of those civilizations were all well aware of mounting issues of constant drought, warfare, failing infrastructure, unstable foreign relationships, but each of those civilizations failed to cooperatively pool together collective resources and solutions until the problems became irreversible. Costa also uses the book to point out the many ways that these civilizations are mirror images of what we see today in modern Western civilization. The sky is falling. But don't worry, as innovation consultant W. Edwards Demings once said, it's not necessary to change. After all, survival is not mandatory. Now, like many of us, I go far back on many of these issues as Chicken Little the First. And as a lifelong Unitarian Universalist, I found great comfort in knowing that our movement is willing, even prefers, to stand on the cutting edge of social change. Our stance on inclusivity and tolerance makes us the perfect religious community to amplify the moral voice within the evolutionary conversation that could save humanity and the planet. Only one problem with this. Unitarian Universalism is shrinking. Now, I'm not so worried that our numbers as a denomination are going down or that our funding is going down, which is virtually true for all denominations. What concerns me the most is actually seeing that there is an amazing upwelling of global social consciousness, and grassroots efforts are beginning to emerge and organize everywhere. And this organization is spreading across the planet, and we're not part of it. When I came here to Manassas just 7 months ago, I had just finished a year-long online course called Evolutionary Enlightenment, which is part of the Integral Movement. And it's a movement that connects personal consciousness raising with global issues. It included 1,400 online participants from all over the world who got together every week in study groups to discuss ways to deepen the spiritual commitment by collectively addressing essential social change in their local areas. The interesting thing that I found out about this group is the people who were in this class were our demographic. They were significantly younger, but they were like us in every other respect. They were educated, informed, committed to inclusivity. They were spiritual, even political, embracing diversity and plurality, and they were dedicated and ready to engage the world to help create more love and more peace and more justice. The only problem? By and large, they didn't give a rat's ass about Unitarian Universalism, or any other religion for that matter. In their opinion, religious institutions and churches in general are yesterday's approach to today's problems and tomorrow's solutions. The sky is falling. So let me tell you why I think that is good news. The sky falling is exactly the sign of urgency you'd expect to see in any healthy system when it begins encountering toxic symptomology around it. All healthy systems, which are capable of resilience and adaptability, are going to scan the horizon and notice danger when it appears and attempt to self-correct. we see this as a mechanism that is built into biology. Our bodies contain incredibly complex, efficient processes to observe and identify and filter toxic material. Biological systems are constantly scanning in terms of being able to determine self from not self. And when it sees something that's not self, it assumes that it is parasitic and unleashes a cascade response to eliminate the thing threatening the health of the overall system. Same thing exists in environmental systems, where the network identifies material or processes that are sustainable or not sustainable. And when we see the sky falling, the ice caps melting, the oceans rising, these are the Earth's cascade responses trying to self-correct, trying to eliminate unsustainable practices that are throwing the planet's living systems out of balance. And now we are seeing social systems eliciting a immunological response as well on a social scale. Some of you might know environmental activist Paul Hawking, whose work has taken him all over the world to promote awareness and cooperation of our planet's immunological response. Invariably, he came home from conferences with pockets filled with business cards from colleagues who wanted to team up with him. And these came from people at NGOs or other nonprofits, each of whom were committed to addressing some small, specific, systemic problem. Sometimes cards were from environmental groups, but just as often they were from social or religious groups working on water rights or food production or interrelated issues of economic disparity or public health or racism. It felt like these new NGOs were emerging every day so fast that he didn't have enough space to keep all the cards on his little houseboat. So they seemed to keep swallowing his desk, and to create some sanity, he put them all in a box. And that box became a bigger box, which became a canvas bag, which grew like a cancer until it eventually swallowed his entire closet. And when it escaped and he started to trip over it, he decided to try and figure out just how many of these NGOs were actually emerging in the world. And he did a little research and he typed a list naming each organization, which by itself took several years. And he began to understand this project as itself an environmental response. And he began bringing it up at the conferences at which he spoke. And eventually, for dramatic effect, during his talks, he began scrolling the names of these NGOs like you'd see credits at the end of a movie. And he'd tell his audiences that these were all cooperative organizations that had a common interest in coming together for the benefit of restabilizing the health of the planet. And if he were to let this list scroll, it would go through his entire talk. And in fact, if the people were to come back the next day and listen to his talk, it would still be scrolling. And he would tell them to come back next week. And if they came back next week, he'd tell them to come back the week after that. And if they came back next week, he'd tell them to come back next month. And the month after that. It would take almost 10 weeks, nonstop, night and day, to scroll through all the NGOs that have formed as a response to the various forms of environmental and social diseases currently inhibiting the interdependent system of life on this planet. When people ask him if he is pessimistic or optimistic about the future, his answer is always the same. If you look at the science, he says, about what is happening on this planet, and you aren't pessimistic, you don't understand the data. But if you meet the people who are working to restore this earth and the lives of ordinary people, and you aren't optimistic, you haven't got a pulse. And the good news is that the people of today with a pulse are becoming incredibly interconnected and highly cooperative. They are beginning to mimic the cooperative complexity built into our evolutionary code that all living systems hold. By that, I mean that every human body contains over 1 quadrillion cells, 90% of which are not even human cells. Our bodies are communities, and without these other microorganisms as part of them, we would perish in hours. Each human cell has 400 billion molecules, each conducting millions of processes between trillions of atoms. The total cellular activity is beyond 1 septillion transactions at any one moment. That means in a millisecond, our body undergoes 10 times more processes than there are stars in the universe. The point is that just as our bodies have used biochemistry to create an interdependent microcosmic response, our global system around us is in the midst of using the internet to create an interdependent macrocosmic response. But whether or not it succeeds on time depends upon us. A few years ago, Paul Hawking offered the commencement address at the University of Portland, and he said this: "Each one of you holds a diploma, and there is some invisible writing on the back of it. And that writing says, 'You are brilliant, and the earth is hiring.' You are going to have to figure out what it means to be a human being on earth at a time when every little living system is declining and the rate of decline is accelerating. Basically, the earth needs a new operating system. You are the programmers, and we need it within a few decades. The sky is falling, and it is a race against time, so what do we need to do?" Let me borrow the call recently issued by UUA President Peter Morales when he says we need to do 3 things. Get religion, build leadership, and cross borders. Friends, we need to start with getting religion. But keep in mind, the religion called for is not the religion that is commonly pervaded across the landscape. It's not about personal comfort or individual salvation. Those ideals are luxuries because lives are being lost every day. If you go back to the original impulse of religion, you will read about people whose ideals charted great courses. People like Abraham and Jesus and Socrates and Buddha and Muhammad and Lao Tzu. And understand that these people were starting social movements, not religions. Yes, they practice in a reverent way, but that's because the work before them filled them with awe. And they recognized that alleviating the suffering of people around them was holy work. And above all, these people, the people who start revolutionary social movements, were not ever looking for docile zombie followers to worship them. They were looking for people who were as blown away and grateful as they were to be part of this miracle of life all around them, and who wanted to offer their gratitude in service of sharing this life with more people. But everywhere they encountered conflicts and threats to this life and looked for the people and the collective social consciousness to rise above petty fears, distrust, and greed. These social revolutionaries were about the work of building leadership. Religious leadership is about cultivating real relationships with your neighbors in an age of ignorance, apathy, distrust, violence, and even barbarity. Friends, I refuse to believe that the awesome majesty of our earthly home and all of its resources will be bled dry by selfish consumerism and corporate greed, because I believe that there is simply too much collective consciousness emerging within us to allow that to happen. And there are too many others around us, people learning to act on behalf of their children and the elderly and their friends and their neighbors and strangers, learning to see past differences and choose common cause and cooperation, who believe that this short-sightedness is not enough to run our planet. What it will come down to is the cosmic contest that we all know to be truly at work, that we've all felt personally. It's love versus fear. We've always known it will emerge as the central conflict out there because we've always felt it to be somewhat the central conflict in here. The question is, can we summon enough love, which is to say compassion and generosity and a willingness to work for the common good of all, when we encounter the fear around us in all of its desperation and greed and urgency? That is the leadership that we need to summon. And this is the ad that is currently running. You are brilliant. The earth is hiring. Must supply your own love and have experience sharing. Which brings me to our final point. We really need to learn how to cross borders. Everywhere we look, there are people and NGOs rising up to become part of the cascade response, healing the planet. But as the people in my evolutionary enlightenment class helped to teach me, it's not likely nor important that their spirit joins Unitarian Universalism as it is that Unitarian Universalism joins their spirit. It's time to leave behind our religious fantasy that one day the lights will come on in the world around us and all the like-minded people that we've talked so much about will suddenly start pouring into our churches and help us heal the planet. It's time for our churches to start becoming other-minded and pour ourselves into the people who are out there saving the planet. And to do that, we need to stop tying ourselves up in knots. Stop focusing on what you use are not about, what we do not do, what we cannot believe. You know all of those Catholics that some of you pass on the way to church up on Sudley Road every day who are holding up their signs against abortion? You are probably not going to team up with them about women's rights. But you might find common ground when you sit down and talk to them about feeding the poor, or working for a living wage, or fair immigration laws, or prison reform. And all of those things need to be done, and they need good partners. To do that, we need to stop showing everyone our butts, like we do so often when we disagree, letting small differences stand in the way of big partnerships. Such distinctions promote isolation and small thinking at a time when cooperation is crucial. I keep telling everybody I talk to that our movement, Unitarian Universalism, needs a new t-shirt. And I think we need to consider wearing shirts that ask us, "Does this church make my butt look too big?" Because, friends, that is the mark of an effective church these days. Pride and privilege have no place where we are called to go, which is toward a world that brings together the young and the old, the gay and the straight, the rich and the poor, and every other distinction that promotes the illusion of separateness. The time is at hand for UUs to play a role in determining whether the final word on the human influence in this planet will be paradise or parasite. get religion, build leadership, cross borders. And if you can't do all three, just do one. Do it with all your heart. Do it as though life on this planet depends on you, because it does. The sky is falling to the glory of life.